For those of you who are here and are here because of the baby dedication, we're glad you came. We're not done celebrating the new babies yet. As I said earlier, we're going to have a moment of prayer at the end of the service. And for those who are watching this online now, later on YouTube or listening to the podcast, let me just say to you that today is a little unusual. We're celebrating a baby dedication today. And so I want to talk about that for a little bit today in this hour. And I realize when I get started here that all of us are in different spots in our journey, but we're really focusing today on the fact that we have three in the room new babies and parents within a year old, 3 weeks old to 1 year old celebrated today. And then we also have a lot of families who are raising young kids as well in our earlier service and in this service. And I want to talk about that a little bit today. I want to get started with something that Jesus said one time while he was referencing a larger idea. The topic was Jesus was about to go to the cross and he was about to suffer and die for our sins. Later in the Christian writings, someone would write these words. They would say that Jesus endured the cross. He endured the cross. He endured it and despised the shame of it, but he did so for the joy that was set before him. It was not easy, but he knew that it would be over, and when it was over, it was going to be worth it. And so beforehand, Jesus is in the upper room. The night he would be arrested, the next day he would be crucified. He was going to rise again. He told his disciples, I'm about to die. I'm about to rise again. He told them many times. He said, I'm going to leave you after that. And he said, you're going to have your own ministries and your own burdens and your own crosses to bear. And it won't always be easy, but the same principle applies. In fact, here's what he said today, and it's a very fitting verse. In John 16:21, Jesus said, it will be like a woman suffering the pains of labor. That's a very appropriate verse today on Baby Dedication Day. It'll be like a woman suffering the pains of labor. Now, for some of the mothers we're celebrating today, that was not that long ago that you suffered the pains of labor. And for others of you, maybe it was many years ago, but you probably still remember that season of life. I am not a woman. One of the many times I thank God for that. So I've never experienced that. But I know that Jesus says, a woman suffering the pains of labor, he says this, when her child is born, her anguish gives way to joy because she has brought a new baby into the world. Although I've never experienced that, I do know that from hearing from moms that, you know, yes, it's painful and a tough time, and you can talk about it forever, but when that baby's in the world, in your arms, it was worth it. In fact, the craziest phenomena ever happens after watching my wife go through labor a few times and after knowing people who've gone through labor, and my daughter-in-law recently, what always amazes me is this, is that several months after the child is born, maybe a year or so the child's born, she'll say, look at her spouse and say, let's do it again. What? You want to do that again? Yeah, I want another one. Because, yes, it was painful. But the joy set before was worth it all. And so that's what Jesus said. I'm going to launch from there and talk a little bit about that today because we are celebrating today at Baby Dedication a moment that you were looking forward to when you were hoping to get pregnant or found out you were pregnant. But here's the deal. Pregnancy itself was a process. It was a 9-month process, right? There were highs and there were lows. There was fun, like finding out the gender maybe, or doing the baby kick for the first time, or picking out names. There was fun. There was stress. There were things that you maybe put off for a while because you were pregnant. And maybe there were some things that needed to go for good. But it was a process that culminated in the birth of that child. And now, you're entering a new season as a mom and dad. As a mom and dad, you're entering a new season, and this is a new process. And this is a longer process than 9 months of pregnancy. This is raising a child for 18 years to adulthood, where hopefully they'll be able and ready to face the world move into adulthood 18 years later. It's a longer process, but it's still a process, right? And like the other process, there will be highs and there will be lows. There will be fun and there will be stress. There will be things that you put off for a while because of the season you're in. There may be some things that need to go for good. But you're going somewhere. You have an end in mind, a goal in mind for your relationship. And I want to talk about that today, and we're going to look at a few verses in a moment here. I want to talk about today to parents, not just to the three of you who are celebrating baby dedication, although you're the reason I'm doing this, but to all the young families, whether your baby dedication was last year, or whether your baby dedication was many years ago, you didn't have one, but you're raising kids, you have children, toddlers, school-age kids, teenagers. I want to talk to all of you today, and I realize that as I do that, that not all of us are in that boat. For some of you, you're not in that boat yet, but if you're hoping to be somebody, this is good talk for you as well. And for those of you who you're like, that never worked out for us, for me. And if that's a pain point, you're like, I'm so sorry for that, and I get how tough moments like that can be. For others of you, you're like, I'm done with that stage of life, so it doesn't apply to me. And maybe for some of us, we've raised our kids and they're adults, and there's even pain in that relationship. That's a real thing too. In fact, that's a thing for several of us in church here, and maybe for those watching online now or later as well. And I want to say that that's life sometimes. And I will encourage you, don't face those journeys alone. Get some support around you, because it's a whole thing. And grief is hard enough without, you know, all the complications that we add emotionally to it. Don't face that burden alone. But knowing that not all of us are in the stage of raising kids anymore or at all, I'm going to appeal to the rest of us today to be excited and supportive for us to challenge the families who are. Because we are a church family here. And that means that we rally around each other. That means that we're there for each other in the different stages of our life. And we want to be there for those who are raising kids. And I hope that we want all of us, even if we're past this stage, want to have someone speak into the lives of those who are early in the stage. And here's why. When I was a young parent, I valued the input. I valued the support. I valued the teaching to help me figure some things out and make my journey easier along the way. And so if you're further down the road, I hope that you will value that for the sake of those who are there. And whether that, you know, however that lands with us, that it will be helpful to the young families today in their journey. And so, we're going to look at the book of Ephesians. Now, Ephesians is a letter that the Apostle Paul wrote to the church in Ephesus. It was a bunch of people who he cared for deeply. He sent young Timothy to pastor that church in his absence, and he wrote a letter to them. And if you ever read many of Paul's letters, here's what you know. Paul's letters often follow the template of the book of Ephesians. In fact, if you want a little side note, deep dive thought for your Bible study, many of Paul's letters are like Ephesians. The first part of the letter, or so, half or so, he talks about the gospel. He talks about the doctrines of salvation and faith. And then several of his letters, like this one, the last part of the letter, he moves from faith in Christ to following Christ. He moves from what it means to the gospel and believing in him to now what it looks like to follow him in our relationships. And he'll talk about relationships with employers and employees, with husbands and wives, with moms and dads and children, with friends and people in faith community, forgiving each other, serving each other. So he's going to go from doctrinal and faith in the first part of the letter to practical living in the second part of the letter. That's often his template. And in this last part of chapter 6, Ephesians 6, he talks to parents and children for a little bit. We're going to see a few of these verses. I'm going to give some practical advice from my life that hopefully will help you. Let's begin with Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 1. Paul says, "Children, obey your parents because you belong to the Lord, for this is the right thing to do." He's saying, obey your parents. And he uses that phrase, because you belong to the Lord. I just want to make a quick note. This is a very common technique of the Apostle Paul in teaching through relational dynamic. If you'll pay attention, you'll see him do this often. He'll talk to this with employers, employees, husbands and wives, and children and parents. What he's saying is this: if you are in a relationship with somebody who on the other side of you is not always doing their job the best or the right, or you're frustrated with them, or they're difficult people, that you can still do your part in that relationship even when they're complicated, because you're not doing it only for them, you're doing it for the Lord because you belong to the Lord. Maybe they don't always feel worthy, but he is worthy. So do it because you belong to him. This is a very common thing Paul would leverage in all of our relationships. If they're difficult, do it as unto the Lord. So children, now notice this is children, obey your parents. Now, you say, well, my parents aren't always right. That's true, and we'll get to that in a minute here, but he says children, obey. Now, you're not always going to be children when you grow up someday. You don't have to obey your parents when you're not a child anymore, right? I heard someone many years ago, a man, come and say to me, oh, they're supposed to always obey us, no matter how old they get, because they're always our children, so they're always to obey. And I'm thinking, oh, come on, sir, you don't believe that to your parents. You're just, you know, that's a convenient little idea. But here's the thing, okay? Here's the thing. Let me just dispel that by saying, Paul's not talking to parents in this verse. He's talking to children. He's not talking to people with children. He's not talking to people about their children. He's talking to people about their parents. Does that make sense? And he's saying, when you have parents, here's what you're supposed to do. In verse 1, he says, children, here's what you're supposed to do. In verse 2, even when you're adults, here's what you're supposed to do. But he's talking about how you relate to your parents. So don't invert those and make weird doctrine, right? So he's saying, when you're a child, you're to obey. You say, but they're not always right. But he says, but no, but you know what? He says, this is the right thing to do. Obey your parents, for this is the right thing. In other words, the statement is this: we obey because this is right, not because they are right. That's what he's teaching us. When you're young, you're legally accountable to your parents, and so and they're legally accountable for you, and you're accountable to them. And so you obey because it's right, not because they're always right, although your parents are always right, I'm sure, if you're a minor still, they're always right. But no, they're not, but because this is right. Now, verse 2, he pivots to when you're no longer a child. Now, here's the thing. He's going to say next, honor your father and your mother, verse 2. Honor your father and mother. So you're not a child, but you can still honor our parents. Now, here's the thing. There's a lot to unpack there. First of all, when you're grown up, you don't have to obey your parents. If you're an adult, the kid's like, they made me take a bath. They made me, you know, change my clothes. You know, okay, when you get to be 35 years old, if your parents call you and say, did you brush your teeth? Go brush your teeth right now. Go brush your teeth. You can say no, because I'm an adult, and I'm going to let them rot out. I'm going to have gums. I'm going to talk like this, but I can do whatever I want to do. Because you're an adult, you can do that. So that's congratulations. But here's the thing. When we're children, we obey. When we are adults, we're called to honor our father and mother. We don't outgrow that. Now, I know that's complicated. I know as I say this, there are people here, you have a complicated dynamic perhaps with a parent who was never there and then all of a sudden they're there and has expectations or was abusive or things are crazy. There's so much that can go into that. And you don't know, how do I do that? Because sometimes if we're not careful, we can all be a little bit manipulative. And you know, someone once said, you know, the word narcissism is a buzzword, but we all have some level of narcissistic tendencies in us. Hopefully very low and not very high. But a manipulative person will leverage things. For example, a manipulative parent might say to their adult child, you have to obey me still, or else I don't think you're honoring me. I'm going to leverage. You have to do what I want you to do, or you're not honoring me. And that's not the point. If it's complicated in this dynamic, I understand. I just want to say to you, get some input. If you have a complicated situation, get some input. The worst thing you could do is just shell that up with you alone or you and your spouse. Besides talking to God about it, go get some counsel. Get some outside input. Because most of the time, the marriages that I've worked with through the years, most marriage problems are mainly impacted by mom and dad issues that carry into the next relationship. So if you got something going on that makes this statement on the screen painful to you, then maybe you need to look at something deeper for the sake of all of your relationships. Because that might be complicated. And it might be something that you have to navigate what that looks like in this situation. Have help figuring that out. But we're called to obey when we're kids and then always honor. He goes on to say this in verse 2. He says, this is the first commandment with a promise. He says, if you honor your father and mother, quote, things will go well for you and you will have a long life on the earth. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that if someone dies young, they must not have honored their parents? If they lived a long life, they must have honored their parents. That's not what that verse means. Let me explain it to you. Paul is actually making a quote here. That's why he says it's the first commandment with a promise. He's quoting the promise. Let me give you the backstory. 1,500 plus years earlier, when the Israelites were coming out of slavery, and they were given, Moses went into the mountain to get commands to help a new nation have laws to live by because they never had to govern themselves before. He gets the commandments. He gets the top 10, the 10 commandments. And commandment number 4 was honor your father and mother. And it was the first commandment that was given that, to the nation that had a promise attached to it. And the promise to the Israelites was this: honor your father and mother that it may go well with you and that you may live long on the land that the Lord your God is giving you. And what that meant was this: it was a national promise, not that every person would do that. It was a national promise that if a group of people or a nation of people who learn to honor those who've gone before them, who learn to respect their elders and the people who've gone before them, are people who, that's a group of people or that's a nation that will thrive and be healthier than those who tear down the ones who went before them and belittle and mock and neglect them. That we're taught to not only respect our elders, but to honor our parents and remember those ahead of us. Moses said, if as a nation we'll do that, we'll prosper together. And Paul's reminding us, he's quoting, he's shorthanding that to the people today, saying we're supposed to still remember the importance of doing so. Now, notice that in these verses that we just read, notice that there are two different stages that Paul mentions in being a child to your parents. There's the obeying stage, there's the honoring stage. You obey as a child, you honor all the time, right? So obeying and honoring. Here's the thing, mom and dad, we'll talk to mom and dad here. The obeying by our kids is often done because they have to. Not only because Jesus, God says so, but because the law says so, right? They'll support you on that. They have to. You're how they eat and live indoors. So the obeying is often done because they have to. The honoring is a choice. And it's a choice that, you say, well, it's a command from God. Yeah, but they can choose to obey that command of God or not. And here's the thing. They might do it because God tells them to. We can be pretty bad parents sometimes, and our kids will still choose to honor us because their faith compels them to. We can be great parents at times or do a pretty good job, and they choose not to honor us because they don't want to follow God. There's a free will element there that we can't control. But it's still a choice. And while it'd be nice to think that we can rely on the idea that they would someday honor us because the Bible says they have to, wouldn't we rather them do it because they want to? Because of the example we've set, because of the way we've raised them, that we would honor us because we are honorable if they are healthy enough to do that, that we are honorable. That's a better reason. And so because of that, Paul then speaks to the parents in the next verse. Look at verse 4. He starts by saying, fathers. Now I'm going to pause right there and say, was Paul speaking specifically to dads? Maybe. Maybe. Because in that culture, the fathers were very patriarchal. The women honestly didn't have a lot of, you know, they were almost very subjected to their husbands in that culture. They have no rights and couldn't own property. And it's just, it's a whole thing. It was a man's world more so than it ever has been since, more than it is now for sure. And so maybe it was to fathers because of the power dynamic. Maybe it was to parents in general because he never addresses the moms. Maybe he's talking to mankind or humankind here. But even if he's speaking to fathers specifically, I think in today's day we can appreciate that what I'm about to read in this verse doesn't always apply just to men, it applies to men and women. It's definitely good advice for moms and dads. Because let's be honest, stereotypes are stereotypes for a reason, but all stereotypes don't fit everybody. Like, for example, many women are naturally, stereotypically more nurturing, but not every woman is nurturing by nature. And some men are wired to just go outside the cave and club something and kill it and drag it back to the cave and let's cook it and eat it, you know. I mean, you know, provide and protect, and some men are not. And so we're not all the same in our whatever. And so this next verse, whether it's spoken to fathers but applies elsewhere or spoken to everybody, this is good advice for parents as we help our children go through these stages of their relationship with us. He says, fathers or parents, do not provoke your children to anger by the way that you treat them. Does that mean that your kids are never angry with you? No. They might be angry because they weren't allowed to do something they wanted to do, or had to do something they didn't want to do, like brush their teeth, or whatever. And again, I said earlier that a manipulative parent may say to their adult child, "You have to honor me because the Bible. If you don't obey me, then you're not honoring me." A manipulative child could say to their parents, "The Bible says you're not. You're provoking me to anger by asking me to do what you want me to do." So that could be misused. Obviously, parenting your kids, they might get angry with your decision sometimes when you're doing the right thing. That's okay. But they should never be provoked to anger, notice the words in yellow, by the way you treat them. In other words, don't provoke them to anger because you mistreat, because we are negligent or absent or there and we're abusive. Physically, verbally, with our mean words and our harsh actions, with our pride, with our sense of, you know, I know that there's a lot of pressure when you're, you know, I understand that when you become a parent, I get it. Some of us, you know, we're still the same people who were struggling with being whatever we are, and now to somebody, we're this person supposed to know better, but we're still this person trying to figure it out. And then if life and work is complicated and marriage is going through something and, you know, other stuff's happening, it's easy to not be our healthiest and our kids could suffer for it. We got to be careful that we don't let our own problems flare up and take it out on the people that we're responsible for. It's not right. It's not fair. And Paul says don't do it. Don't mistreat them and provoke them to an angry life that says, "I'll do what I have to until I get out of here, but I will not be live this way one day." He says, don't do that. He says, rather, in the next part, rather, he says, bring them up with the discipline and the instruction that comes from the Lord. He's saying, here's what you should do instead. You should bring them up. Here's what that means. It doesn't mean drive them up, like with a whip. Get going. It means you bring them up. You know what it means? It means you walk alongside of them. It's, you know what it's called? It's called relationship. Relationship is when you're with somebody on a journey together, right? We're on this journey together. And so you bring them up and you're like, here's why we do what we do and here's where we're going and let's experience life and live it together. And we're bringing them to where they're going. We're bringing them to adulthood, to a spot where they will be on their own and no longer have to obey, but hopefully we'll still be in relationship, we hope. And so bring them up with the discipline and instruction that comes from the Lord. Michelle and I were young parents. We had a pastor that we respected speaking into our lives. By the way, I talked about this a couple weeks ago, about, you know, staying, you know, in church and in involved in God's word. We've always tried to have God's word spoken into our lives, even though we're in ministry. For me, I don't get to sit down and hear a sermon every Sunday. I'm the one giving it. And while I think you learn a lot from preparing and giving it, I also need that input. So through the years, I've listened to messages when I'm not pastoring and try to take in and grow as a person myself. And Michelle and I have been in this role, but we've always had pastors that have spoken into our lives. There was an older pastor, older than us, whose kids were already raised, and we were raising our kids. And we heard him teach that he and his wife had two goals when they were raising kids. Two goals that they had as a couple for when their kids were grown. They had two goals. One goal was for the two of them as a couple, and the other goal was for them with their children. And we were younger parents, and we heard this, and we said, man, that's really good. And we're not, I mean, maybe I'm not creative enough, but I'm like, I'm just going to borrow their goals. Why reinvent the wheel? So we just said, let's make those two goals our goals. And we did. Now, this pastor who told us this, he went a step further. He actually had them made into fancy plaques, or I meant not plaques, but pictures with frames, and they put them on the walls of their walk-in closet. So that the whole house wouldn't see them, but every day when they go to their bedroom and would walk in their closet to get their clothes, they'd see these plaques, or these frames, with these two goals they had for themselves while they were raising their kids. And we didn't make the frames for our closet. It wouldn't fit anyhow. But we decided we were going to make these goals our goals. And I'll share them with you because I want them to help our young families if they can. Our first goal that we adopted was for the two of us to enjoy being together when our kids are gone. Because we knew our kids would be gone one day. And we wanted the two of us to enjoy being together. You say, well, Arlen, I thought this was a message about baby dedication and the new parenting, and this is about each other. Are you changing the subject? Yes and no, because it fits. Because I'll be honest, and Michelle reminded me, we were talking about this message this week, and I was telling her about some things I was going to say, and she reminded me that when we were a young couple, we heard someone say to us one time, as a young couple, they said, one of the greatest gifts you could give your children is to love their other parent, to love your spouse. And I've seen that through the years, the stability, some children are born and they live in an unstable home, and they still overcome it and become amazing. And some kids are given a stable home and they still there. So we can't, that's their decision. But the stability and the lack of an inner quiet PTSD, that childs can have a peace when their home life is stable because their parents love each other, is a treasure. It's a gift to say, man, I'm so glad. I don't know how many times my kids through the years have said, I have friends, you know, in school and places we've been, and their home is so rough, and I realize how good we have it with you and mom. And so I thought that's a good gift we can give our kids, is to have a good marriage. But this was beyond our kids' home life. This is when our kids are grown and gone. We wanted the two of us to still enjoy being together because they leave. Can I give you guys some of you probably know this, but let me just say this out loud. The divorce rate of people in their empty nest years is pretty high. It is. Anyone want to opine why that is? Yes. Who said that? Yeah, you grew apart, right? It happens to us. Because what happened was a couple was once young and they met each other and they connected and they spent time together and they connected and they fell in love and they got married. And what happens to us though is job and career and family and children and life, and we can just get so caught up in all of that that we drift, right? And as the drift happens, the couple sitting there saying, we don't have time to worry. What holds us together is the whole family. But the family unit changes when the kids move out one day. And all of a sudden, the house is empty, and there's two strangers looking at each other. And they're looking at each other saying, who are you? And so there's what has to happen in that moment is either they split up, or they live an unhappy life together, or they figure out how to reconnect like they used to when they first met. And we said, we don't want to have to do any of that. We'd like to stay connected. So how can the two of us enjoy being together when our kids are gone? And so that was our first goal that we borrowed, and we thought it was good. The second goal was this, for our kids to want to be with us when they no longer have to be. That they'd want to come around for the trip, if they can get time off to go to the trip, or they can come to the special occasion, the holiday or whatever, when they don't have to anymore. That they are on their own, they have their own life, but they still want us to be around when they don't have to be anymore. Now, here's the thing. That can't be guaranteed. There are parents who are terrible and their kids still show up, and their parents who are good and their kids don't, because they have their own choices to make. That's how it goes. Here's how I want to illustrate this for you. I mentioned pregnancy earlier as a microcosm of raising kids. So let me go back to pregnancy. When you found out you were pregnant and someone asked you, do you want a boy or a girl? You probably said, I just want a what? Healthy baby. Could you guarantee a healthy baby, yes or no? No, you cannot. But what you can do is you can make the choices as you're pregnant that give them the best chance to be a healthy baby. And then if they're somehow not a healthy baby, you just have to put it in God's hands. And when you're raising kids, can you guarantee that you'll have a healthy relationship when they're grown? You can't guarantee that. All you can do is make the choices that give that the best chance of happening. And if it doesn't work out, you have to put that in God's hands and get some support in that journey, right? But those are the things we're striving for. So these are the goals we had to aim for. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about, we then started making plans. If we have a goal, we got to have a plan, because goals and plans are both important. Now, before I talk about the plans, I want to say this about the goals. Goals come before plans. Goals have to come first. And the reason why is if you have plans in life but you don't have goals, you might end up in the wrong place. It's called climbing the wrong ladder. Has anybody ever heard that term before, climbing the wrong ladder? Is that familiar to a few of you? Okay, what it means is this. You could be busy climbing the ladder of life, climbing the ladder of success, only to get to the top and realize that you are not where you wanted to be. Like, whoops, I don't want to be here. I climbed, I didn't get to where I wanted to be. So the whole point is to decide that you want to make sure your ladder's leaning against the correct wall. That what you're climbing is going to take you to where you're trying to get to. So goals have to come first so that you know this is what I'm aiming for and that the plan I have is supposed to take me there. That's all we can do. So those were our goals. So we knew what we were aiming for. And then we had to say, now what's our plan? Now, plan's important too. Here's why. Because a goal without a plan is just a dream. So I'm going to build a great business. It's my goal. What are you doing? Nothing. Just going to hope. Okay, that's a wish. That's a dream. A goal without a plan is just a dream. And so you got to have a goal first. You go to the right destination, but then you got to climb that ladder. What's the ladder? What's the plan? And so we decided we needed to have a plan. So for example, let me illustrate a couple things for you to give you some groundwork. I'm going to give you an assignment. I'm going to give you homework today. Don't you love homework? It's summer break. You're out of school. You're adults now, and I'm giving you homework. But before we do, let me illustrate a plan for you. A goal without a plan is just a dream. So when Michelle and I said our goal number one was for the two of us to enjoy being together when we no longer have, when our kids are gone, when that was our first goal, we said, how are we going to do that? So what we decided to do was incorporate a three-prong process to stay connected. And that was to connect daily, to date weekly, and to get away annually. Now, for you young families, please don't blow this off. You can, but I hope you don't. Connect daily means the two of us connect every day, just the two of us. You're like, well, I want to connect with my kids every day. Yes, connect with your kids every day. That's wonderful, but you need to connect the two of you. That's how you fell in love. So you could be in the morning before the kids are up or after the kids go to bed. One of the reasons why I'm for the kids going to bed at a decent hour besides for their sake is for your sake. And so you can connect together. When our kids got older, we would start taking walks sometimes around our neighborhood. You know, in if you walk at any kind of a clip at all, as a parent, the age you're probably at that stage, you can walk a mile in less than 20 minutes. You can walk more than a mile and a half in half an hour. And so just to get a walk and some exercise with no phones in your hands and just connect, or after they're in bed or whatever, but connect daily. Michelle and I said, we got to connect daily so we don't lose sight of each other raising kids. And then number two is date weekly. That's just the two of you, not the kids, not friends, the two of you. Now, nothing wrong with going out with friends. I want to go out with our whole family. Great, do that, but also go out with just the two of you. So what do I do with the kids? Chain them to the radiator. They won't die. That's your motto. They won't die. No, I'm just kidding. Don't do that. But here's the thing. No, go out together. Find somebody. Make a system, but go out together. Here's why. That's how you fell in love, right? You met, you connected, and you went out and stayed connected to each other. And if you're not careful, you'll stop this. So date every week. Find someone, and just the two of you. And they say, well, I don't have a lot of money. It doesn't take a lot of money. Trust me, my profession, we didn't grow up with a lot of money raising kids. But you know what we learned to do? Sometimes we would have a nice meal somewhere. Sometimes we would oftentimes go get a protein drink or a beverage or a pack a little lunch, go to a park to eat or drink something, take a walk through a nature preserve. There are several great places to walk around here. And you could do that, take some hikes. But and sometimes they're more special and more fancy. It doesn't matter. Figure out what works for you. But get away as the two of you and date weekly. And then the third thing, connect daily, date weekly, and thirdly, get away annually. Say, I want to get away with the whole family. Yes, do that too, but make sure the two of you, at least once a year for a couple nights, at least two nights, get away and remember why you're in what you're in. Remember that the two of you started the whole thing. As the famous patron Saint Brad Paisley once said, you're there all because kids are even there all because two people fell in love, right? So you're gonna get together and get away together and reset and come back stronger. And so those were three prongs for us. Now, were we perfect at those prongs? No, we were not. Sometimes life happened, right? But because we had a plan, we hit those goals, we hit that plan a lot more than if we didn't plan to. Right? So have a plan. A goal without a plan is just a dream. Now, our second goal was for hoping that our kids would want to be with us when they no longer have to be. And so we said, what are we going to do? So we had a few, and I could spend 4 weeks, and we're not doing that. We're going through the life of Jesus on most Sundays. But I could take 4 weeks to talk about this one idea. But let me say this to you, parents. We decided a few things to help us make this happen was, first of all, while we would have rules in our house, we decided to prioritize relationship over rules. First of all, I think that sometimes there's too many rules. People are like, if your rule book is like signing the terms and conditions page of a insurance policy, you might have too many rules. And if our rules are as whimsical as our mood, and our kids are like, I don't know, there's a rule. That's a rule without because you're mad about it, you know? That's not helpful either. I think less is more. I think a couple good rules, like a great rule to have is don't lie, because lying destroys trust, and trust is the foundation of a relationship, so when lying happens, that's more serious than whatever that was done that was wrong. Don't lie is a good rule. I think as a dad, one of my rules was respect your mama. I don't have a rule for myself, so I just have one for her, respect your mama, you know? But I want, you know, just a couple few rules is all you need. But the more important thing we decided was to prioritize relationship over rules. And the reason we did that was because we knew that that's what God has done for us. Did you hear this? That's what God has done for you and me. That's the gospel. In fact, that's before the gospel. That's back in the book. I mentioned the Ten Commandments earlier. The Ten Commandments that Moses gave the children of Israel. Does anybody remember how the Ten Commandments start? How do they start? I'm putting you on the spot here. It's not fair. Anybody? What's the first commandment? Anybody know that one? Know the gods before me. Okay. I'm going to go home dejected today. Before the Ten Commandments, before that, there was a statement that started the Ten Commandments, and here's what it sounds like. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of slavery in Egypt. What God was saying is this. I stepped in, I rescued you, I have your Redeemer, we are in relationship. Now, here's some rules to live by. Relationship before rules. And when we didn't keep the rules, and when we haven't, he sent his son to be our Savior. The gospel is God saying, I'm not here to punish you for lack of following all my rules, I'm here to redeem the relationship back to myself. I'll pay the price, I'll suffer, I'll do the hard work to bring us back together because you mean more to me. God sent his son into the world not to judge the world but to save the world through him, John 3:17. That God has prioritized our relationship with him over his rules. Otherwise, none of us would ever see him. And if we're going to be good parents, we have to do the same. So we decided to do that. That means that for, I think, good parenting, what that looks like is that when our kids break a rule, that the correction that we give them is not punitive in nature. It's punitive because we're insulted, we're hurt, we've disrespected, made me look bad, or whatever emotions that come through our head. Correction is not punitive in nature. Corrective was restorative to the relationship. That what you did hurt a relationship, let's fix the relationship. That's the goal of correction, is because relationship is what it's all about. And then we decided that our kids, if they're going to go from this obeying stage to eventually being adults and supposed to honor their parents, we knew that that was not going to be like a button you push when they were 17 years old and 364 days and counting, 18, boom. It's a process of them moving from childhood to adulthood. And so we observed what someone taught us was the four stages of parenting. Let me give those real quick to you. The four stages of parenting, they'll be on the screen here. They are coming. The four stages of parenting are the following. The discipline years, ages birth through 5. The training years, ages 5 to 12. The coaching years, ages 12 to 18. And the friendship years, ages 18 plus. Now, this is not some kind of a tight science. Don't get autistic on me and say, I'm going to be on the fifth birthday. Don't get weird. This is basically a template to help us understand that life evolves as you're raising kids. Because obviously, they all kind of overlap. I want my young kids to feel a friendship with me. But let's be honest, when you have an 8-year-old and there's a problem you're trying to deal with, being a parent is more important than being a friend. You got to know what stage you're in. And you might be disciplining your older kids, but if you're treating your 15-year-old the way you did your 3-year-old, you're doing something wrong. You know what I'm saying? We got to understand the stages shift, and so we're evolving with them. And so for us, the discipline years for us were understanding that our kids were too young to know why we do what we do. We're just like, here's the rules, no, yes, no, because we said so. As they move into the training years, there's still some discipline, but now we're saying, come with me. Here's why we do what we do. This is the reason why. This is how we live. This is our system. This is how life works. We're going together and teaching you about it. Training years. We're teaching them. But you're doing some of that in their discipline years. It's not fluid. Don't get stuck on the dates. It's a process. When they got older, there was the coaching years. What does a coach do? How many of you are coaches in this room? I had 2 coaches in the last hour. Are there any coaches in here? No coaches in this hour at all? Ever coached a team at all? Little League. Zane, I know you're a coach. Who else? I heard another name. Steve, you're a coach. Okay, you know what coaches do of any sport? They don't sit there and say, okay, team. Oh, Dave, okay, good. They don't say, okay, team, here's the deal. You guys sit on the bench. I'm going to go on the field and show you how it's done. That's not what a coach does, right? Go, coach. We're winning now. T-ball went great when the coach got in and smashed some home runs. No, coaches are on the sidelines saying, here's how you run the play. Now you go do it. And it's a letting go a little bit. It's saying there's some things I got to control because you can't and must and can't and must. But other things I'm going to say, do your thing. I'm going to give you some input. I'm going to give you some chances to do it right or wrong. And if we get it wrong, we'll figure it out. But I'm going to coach you. And because we're moving towards the age where you're not going to suddenly micromanage someone their entire life and then on the 18th birthday just change everything. It won't happen. They wouldn't know what to do with that. You wouldn't know what to do with that. So it's a stage. And the most important thing we get from these four stages is, and Michelle and I understood that as our kids got older, we had to adapt to the new season of life and how we raised them. And that was helpful to us. Now here's the point I'm trying to make. We just wanted our kids to grow up healthy, functional, and close to God, hopefully, and close to us, hopefully, and some of that's out of our hands, but we wanted to do our part. Can't guarantee a healthy birth. We can do the best we can to give them the best chance. Can't guarantee anything. We can do the best we can to give them the best chance, and we tried to do the best we could, and I hope you will as well as young parents. Now, here's the deal. I know that when I speak about parenting, I'll wrap it up with a few thoughts. I know when I speak about parenting, depending on your stage of life, that sermon means different. I haven't said this in a while, but when I was a younger pastor, I knew a guy who worked in a mega church complex. He was like a campus pastor to a big church with a main pastor in a different location. And the main pastor was a very young dad with very young kids, and the campus pastor had teenagers. And so the main campus pastor asked his employed campus pastor to speak to all the campuses, because he had older kids, about raising kids. And he did. He talked about the challenges and the grace of God in parenting as he's thinking as a parent of teenagers. And his boss was like, no, I want you to give us, he's a young parent. He's like, I want the five rules. These five things will turn out the perfect kids, I want the system, because I understand that in different stages of our lives, we want different kinds of inputs. A young parent's looking for this, or maybe an older parent's looking for this. Maybe when our kids are grown, we're looking for a different conversation. I'm speaking to families raising kids right now today. You might need a different sermon someday. But I want to give you families who are raising your kids, whether they're baby dedication babies today, or whether they're a little older than that, or whether your phone's going off in church, whatever it may be, I want you to do me a favor and take some homework home with you. I'm going to give you two questions I want you to ask each other as a couple raising kids, whether they're little or they're teenagers or whatever they are. Here's the question I want you to wrestle down to the ground from my recommendation. The first question I want you to ask each other as a spouse is this: what is our goal? Now, I gave you a couple goals I had earlier. I want you to figure that out for yourself. Say, well, Arlen, I liked your goals. Can I borrow them? Absolutely. I didn't even invent them. Steal away, okay? Or maybe you're like, Arlen, I am so much more creative than that. That's lame. Awesome. What is our goal? I want all you parents to sit down. And by the way, you probably won't figure it out in one afternoon, but you can start today. Might take you a few days, might take you a couple weeks. You might have to even revisit it down the road and say, we need to adjust it because we didn't think it through fully. I don't know. But sit down and ask, what is our goal for each other once our kids are grown? For our kids, what's our goal? And codify that thing in your own minds at least. Keep it in front of you. And because, after all, if you don't have a goal, then you might be climbing the ladder of life in the rat race of life and find out that you're not climbing to the destination you prefer to get to. We at least want to try to aim for what we're aiming for, right? What's your goal? Second question I want you to ask young parents is this: what is our plan? Because a goal without a plan is just a dream. What is our plan? What is it? How are we as a couple going to stay in good health? How are we going to do our best to get our kids to adulthood and where we want them to be one day? What's our plan? It is not to be my plan. You figure that out for yourself. That's your journey. And it might take you all. This is the one more than the first one. The second question might be the one that needs to be revisited and tweaked every so often. Right? But I'm just asking that you don't take it haphazardly. I know that for some of us, we're like, this will be whimsical and kind of go with the flow. I'm wired that way. In my marriage, Michelle is our planner. She keeps my head on straight. I am the kite and she is the string. That's how we can operate sometimes. Okay, that's fine. I get the free-spiritedness, believe me. But let me be very, very plain. This is too important for us to be flippant about. Our children are too important for us to be flippant about. So sit down and figure out what is our plan. Our marriages are too important. What is our plan? What is our goal? What is our plan? And talk about it. That conversation could be some dates that you have. That could be a weekend getaway you share. That could be some conversations in the evenings. Figure out what is our goal? What is our plan? Because what I hope for you as a pastor and as a friend is a healthy relationship. I'm going to be out a few minutes late with a prayer in our last song, so let me just add to it by saying this. I have been reminded lately of the power of relationship. And I've been reminded by a few things. How fast life goes. Life goes so fast. And relationship is so important. Your parents with young kids, you're in a great season of life. And it feels sometimes long. The days are long, but the years are short. When I was a young parent, we had someone say to Michelle and me, "You're having the time of your life and you don't even know it." The days are long, the years are short. I was on a trip last weekend with our friend, Michelle and I went with our friends Keith and Michelle Cowling to Tennessee last weekend. We were gone for a few days. We hiked in the mountains. We went saw some waterfalls. We had a great time. We were sitting at a restaurant one night talking after an active day. And we were talking about our kids who are all grown now. And how fast it went. And before us all, we're all sitting at this nice restaurant at this table. All of us have tears. It's pathetic, you know. We're all in tears, you know. Because it just goes by. But here's what I've learned. Relationships are everything. We can't control anybody but ourselves. But when you're raising kids, be intentional about the relationship. What is our goal? What is our plan? And my hope and prayer for you is that you'll do it in a way that honors Christ and that the fruit will be rewarding.